All right, guys. Welcome once again to your Dallas Lifestyle Podcast. I'm Brad Howard, and we've got John on the phone once again. And today we're going to cover two really important topics. Number one, we're going to cover how to submit your entries to the Adonis, or the third. Actually, this is the third one, isn't it?
Yeah.
The third Adonis Index Transformation Contest. So we'll get that going. We'll go over those submission requirements and all that good stuff. And then we're going to cover some holiday eating and things like that, give you some good guidelines and some good strategies in order to go through the holiday season without gaining any weight, which is going to be really cool and help keep you on track so you don't feel bad about yourself. And it won't make you seem like a social inept, I guess you could say.
Just obsessive about it.
Yeah, so basically, like we always talk about, keep it cool, keep it covert, and nobody will ever know what's going on. So, yep. All right, well, let's go ahead and cover the submission stuff and guidelines and all that good jazz.
Okay, so the final day of the contest is the 24th. That was by design, so it ended before Thanksgiving. So to officially enter, you put your before pictures that you took earlier when you started the contest, along with the after pictures, which we talked about last week, which is your front, side, and back shot. And in that group of shots, you have to have one with the current day's newspaper visible, and it doesn't need to be any one of the actual shots we're evaluating. It just needs to be taken in that round of pictures and, you know, obviously in the same setting with the same shorts on and stuff, so we know it's part of that grouping. And then from there, you do the 250-word essay and submit that as well, which is just your experiences going through this process, both the what it felt like to do it, your perception of how things change, how people have changed around you, and how they react different to you, and how you react different to people. So just the experience of it all. So that essay is part of it. Obviously the pictures are digital. And all of it, just email it to me. I'll have my address in the blog post where you email it. So, and we'll email that to you as well. So you're emailing them directly to me, and that's officially your submission. And then from there, it'll probably take us a week or two to evaluate everything, and then we'll be announcing the winners a couple of weeks after you submit. And that's essentially it. Oh, and then also with your essay in that document, we need all of your statistics from before and after. So the measurements, your shoulders, your waist, your weight, obviously your height's not changing. And so we need those measurements as well. And that rounds out your submission. So just put your measurements and your essay in one document together.
Yep.
You can calculate out your AI if you want, or we can calculate it. But I'd rather if you just calculate it too and throw in your AI, your actual Adonis Index racial score as well.
Cool. Yep. Pretty simple process. Like I say, it's not a big deal as far as what we require. But you know, we do like to, like I say, there is a, you know, part of the actual process is actually understanding and acknowledging the things that actually have happened and things that have changed. So,
well, that's the point of all of this, right?
It really is. I mean, I think that, you know, a lot of people are kind of scared of it, I guess you could say, and don't like to talk about it. But, you know, we do. We want to know how your life has changed based on this, because we know it changes. And actually what we know, you know what, let's talk about this too, because I don't think we've talked about this in a while, but the fact of, and because people have told us this, and we didn't make this up, but somewhere around 1.5 is where the magic happens.
The Adonis Index ratio of 1.5.
Yeah. You know, and like, we didn't make this up. This isn't in the research. This isn't anywhere. But literally, you know, just feedback we're getting, you know, out of the forums and from customers and stuff like that, is that things start to change at 1.5. There's something that happens.
Yeah, that's a consistent theme in the forums and on email feedback we're getting. And when guys are paying attention to it, they tend to we tend to get feedback where guys are saying, yeah, you know, somewhere around when I crossed 1.5, when I started getting comments from people, and not because on the way, your own perception of yourself, it's, you know, you're noticing the change. So you're noticing, like, a guy who goes from up 1.2 to a 1.3 to a 1.4 to all the way to 1.6, all of it's impressive because you're just happy that you're changing. But it's when everyone else's reaction to you, guys were mentioning that somewhere around 1.5 is when other people's reaction to them really started to change.
Right.
So even though you're if you're a 1.1 and you go to 1.3, you're going to be happy as hell. But other people may still see you the same. Like, you know, they don't see what's really changing under your clothes. But at a 1.5, I'm guessing it starts to show right through your clothes. Like, it just doesn't matter. You can't hide it anymore, I guess you could say.
Right. Well, one of the things we've kind of determined, and this really came out at the Venus Index launch, and we, you know, it's really what we're about over here. But, you know, most, and I think this is where it comes across, is that, you know, most programs and philosophies really only try to take people that are kind of below average and get them back to average. And we haven't figured out terms that make it sound PC.
Yeah, that word sounds bad. But what we're saying is, like, if you're overweight, a lot of programs, its goal is just to get you back to, quote, normal weight.
Yeah, so, like, if you're overweight, the goal is to try to get you back to normal weight or the best weight that you've ever been in, which is probably within the quote-unquote normal range. Same thing if you're kind of a slender guy and you're trying to build muscle, you know, what most of them are trying to do is to put enough muscle on you so that you feel, quote-unquote, normal. Mm-hmm. And that's where they kind of stop. But with us, it goes a little bit farther because that's where the goal is. And so it goes from maybe being, you know, either underweight or under-muscled to normal to what will you consider, you know, special or exceptional. And mm-hmm. I think what we're seeing is that threshold for that special or exceptional seems to be at that 1.5 mark.
Yeah.
I guess that's
and this is more at the true 1.5 we're talking about, not like a skinny 1.5.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't even know if it's possible to be a big like to have a really big waist and really big shoulders. Like, we're talking about actually getting zeroing in on the numbers as we've calculated them.
Right. I mean, if your waist is, let's say your waist is within, you know, an inch or an inch and a half. Probably what I would think is that your waist would be an inch and a half away from the actual, you know,
the waist we calculate. But if you're inches and inches away from it, that may not quite be the aesthetic we're talking about.
Yeah, you need a 1.5 within that range.
Yeah.
So plus or minus an inch and a half off of your waist, and then 1.5 is where it seems to be.
Yeah.
And granted, you know, this is really coming across from a lot of the guys who are losing weight because obviously it takes a little more time to build muscle.
Mm-hmm.
So so let's qualify that a little bit out. I mean,
sure. Well, any of the guys that are skinnier, I guess you could say, and trying to build muscle, it's just a slower process. There's no other way of saying that. Anyone who you can't change as quickly if that's the change you're trying to make is building muscle.
Yeah, I mean, you can fool yourself into thinking you're having bigger muscles, you know, by getting fatter.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like literally. I mean, love him to death, but my brother's pushing 250 right now. He's a big looking dude, right? But I guarantee you, I'm stronger than he is. And I'm at a buck, you know, what, 77 right now.
Yeah.
He's 6'2". And I'm 5'11".
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
The rule of sevens don't dictate he should be 250.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, he's easily pushing, you know, 50 pounds of more fat than he should have on him. You know, like I say. I mean, that's not an insult. I mean,
that's just what it is. Yeah, and that's the whole, the seduction of being big. Like, walking into a room being 250 and having a t-shirt, an XL t-shirt and stretching the sleeves, some guys are seduced by that. They just think that's what they want. And then you take your shirt off and you're like, oh, yeah, you're just kind of squishy.
Yeah, so if you like that, this would be funny. If you like that, just get as fat as you want and wear a girdle.
Yeah, a corset or something.
That'll get you the look right there. Just never take your shirt off. Yeah. That's the best shirt on look you ever had.
Yeah. Anyways, so.
Sorry. So let's talk about some holiday eating strategies really quickly.
Right. So obviously the contest ends the day before Thanksgiving, and we're assuming anybody who was dieting for the contest is going to just enjoy themselves on Thanksgiving, as with probably everybody else, you know, if you celebrate it. And then right after that, there's not too long until Christmas comes around, and whether or not you actually celebrate those, this is just the time of year where lots of people get together and eat. You know, families get together. People just eat a lot around this time of year. And this comes back to the social conventions of eating and celebrating with food. There's nothing wrong with that, and it's kind of abnormal to be the person sitting at the table abstaining from the celebration, so to speak. It doesn't mean you need to have triple servings of everything, but it's it is a bit weird, and you do have some obligation to partake. And it is a bit weird to be the one who's not partaking. So I think the line is drawn is you either show up or you don't. So if you show up, just be there. Be with everybody and just do what everyone's doing. Again, you can, and like you've said, Brad, be mindful of it. You have dessert, but maybe not three helpings of dessert. Like, have everything on the table, but maybe not doubles or triples of everything. So you can be there. You can be part of it all. You don't have, it doesn't have to destroy the look of your body. It's much more difficult to show up and be like, oh, I'm not going to have the mashed potatoes. I'm not going to have dessert. I'll just pick at, you know, some salads and some, I'll just overload on vegetables and really go low on everything else. Like, that's kind of a, that's like sort of not even being there. Like, that's what's kind of the point. And so I think the best way to deal, and that's not going to feel good. You know, even if you do keep your calories low right through the dinner, it's just not going to feel right. Like, it's just, are you really even going to enjoy being there? Like, that's kind of not the point. So I think this the best way to deal with it is to prepare for the week, for those type of events, like preempt it with a few low calorie days on the way into Thanksgiving. So, and I mean, anyone in the contest, that's going to be taking care of it for you, because you're literally the hours before Thanksgiving, you'll be like at your lowest, because you'll be getting ready for your photo shoot. So that's already taken care of. But in general, and then for Christmas too, the next big eat day or whatever else is happening, take a few days before and go low calorie on those days. And I would say literally do a calculation. Maybe just take a guess at how many calories you think you're going to put back on Thanksgiving or on Christmas, and try to create that deficit over the 2 or 3 days that lead into that day. So for instance, if I'm going to be going to an event on Thanksgiving and I really think I'll eat 1500 calories above maintenance. So I'm going to eat 2000 plus 1500, like I'm going to eat 3500 calories at dinner. And it'll be, you know, spread out over hours of grazing and stuff like that. That means I know I got to create a 1500 calorie deficit the days before that dinner, just so I can kind of come out of that weekend even. And that's not that hard. That's just 3 days of being under by 500. And if I really wanted to simplify that, I could knock a couple hundred out of that with a workout, and 300 just with a eating deficit. And so that's actually not that hard when you think about it that way. But if I wait till that weekend, and I'm just eating at maintenance right up to that weekend, and then I crush it on that weekend, now I've created the sort of the emotional stress of having to deal with it afterwards. So I'm like, oh, now I got to catch up to what just happened. So even though it sounds like it should be the same, like what difference does it make if I go under 3 days first, then have the big day, or have the big day, then go under 3 days after? Psychologically, it seems more difficult to try to fix it afterwards than preempt it on the way in. And then it makes the day of eating a lot less of a guilty sort of, it takes the stress away from eating that day.
Yeah. Yeah, so, it really does.
Yeah. So it's just a matter of planning. And then also bookending it too. So, you know, try to create the full deficit on the way in, but still go low calorie the day after too. Not hugely, but a little bit. And then that way, most of the work, or if not all the work's done ahead of time. And then if you have another lower calorie day right afterwards, you may even end up back in a loss state if losing is your goal.
Yeah, I mean, but the big thing is just, all in all, just realize that you're a person, you're human, and, I mean, you're built to have fun and be social and stuff like that. And even if you screw it and monk it up, big deal. Just, I mean, you technically haven't fallen off. Here's the thing that I don't like people saying, you know, I don't like people saying, well, I went crazy and, you know, or I fell off the horse, or, no, you didn't. You didn't. None of that stuff happened. I mean, worst case scenario, you might have ate 7,000 calories or whatever over of what, you know, you would have normally ate over that time period. You know, big deal. This is a reversible process. You know, so as long as you know what to do to solve the problem, then it's not a problem.
Yeah, and it's not a statement about who you are as a person or any of that kind of stuff either.
Yeah, of course not. It's like it's like your problems are only problems when you don't have the solution to the problem. Mm. If that makes sense. It's kind of like if you've got $10,000 in the bank and somebody comes along and says you owe them $100, well, it's not a problem.
But if it's the reverse, you got a problem.
Exactly. Now you got a problem.
Yeah.
So your the level of problem is is basically in conjunction to how high up the kind of the chain you are. So like when you're, if like a perfect example, like I've heard people say something about like the levels of problems. So like let's say you have a level one problem, level two, level three, whatever. And it basically, they use the example of kind of where you are as a person. So if you're a level four person, but you have a level six problem, then you're in deep doo-doo.
No, I see what you're saying, yeah.
But if you're a level 9 person, you have a level 6 problem, it's no big deal.
Yeah, it's within your capability to fix it. Then you just got to get about the business of fixing it.
Right, and exactly. Right. So it's well within your capability of solving, of fixing the issue. It's not even a problem. It's just an issue at that point. Mm-hmm. To me, a problem is something you don't have a solution for.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a solution for it, it's just an issue that you have to resolve.
Right.
So it's kind of...
Yeah, and this time of year is also probably a good time to take a break from training somewhere between – it just sort of happens. Like I almost don't – gyms go on crappy hours over Christmas and all that kind of stuff. So it almost always seems like towards the end of the year there's like a week where just because of travel and just the schedules get messy. So it's almost the best time of year to actually take a good week off to reset too. So,
yeah.
But and an interesting point, that doesn't mean you go crazy with your diet just because you're not training, which some people do. It just means it's probably the time of year that fits to take some time to actually have an unload, like a week off for more recovery.
Yeah, you just look at it like you look at your checking account. That's my best analogy. You know, people talk about, I hate counting calories. You like counting money?
If they say no,
I know they're broke.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. Well, you just have to know. Like if you want it to change in the direction you want, like if you want to affect its change in a predetermined direction, you have to know. Otherwise, it's just going to happen whichever direction it's like as far as calories go. If you don't really know how many you're taking in and burning, you're just going to a year later, you'll look back and go, oh, how did I end up here? But if you want to end up somewhere specifically, then you have to know. You can't just guess.
Did we talk about how easy it is to gain 50 pounds on this size?
Let's touch on that. I don't really know. Quickly. Okay, so this is my I think we've talked about my theory about how I think most people gain weight just purely based on the holidays. So because most people so energy balance, where our bodies are basically designed to eat to energy balance. So however much energy we burn in a day. The way our hormones and our brain and our satiety cycle works, our hunger and satiety, we're more or less designed to want to eat the amount of energy we burnt. That's why all dieting feels like an effort, because we're always below, or at least we're always trying to go below that feeling. So if you and I eat, if our BMR is around 2000 and we work out to burn another 400, so we burn off about 2400 calories on a workout day, we're going to feel like eating about 2,400 calories, give or take. But basically, that's how we're going to feel. And more or less, we'll always do that. Because people don't just gain weight every single day. At least people who have a tendency to gain weight. What happens is, we also can become addicted to certain foods, so we can overeat them when they're present. Which has nothing to do with hunger and satiety. But we also celebrate with food, and tend to overconsume it at any of these events, like Thanksgiving, Christmas, going out, birthdays, weddings, all that kind of stuff. If you just overeat, and it's really easy with calorically dense food, or especially when you're eating socially, if you just overeat just 500 calories a day, which is literally an extra muffin with a bit of butter on it, or a couple bites at each meal, a couple extra bites at each meal, if you actually just did that, you'd gain like 50 pounds a year. But clearly most people aren't gaining 50 pounds a year. So most people are eating to maintenance almost every day. And I think it's just these special occasions where we overdo it. But since there's nothing built into us to underdo it on another day, like what we were saying is if you're going to overdo it on Thanksgiving, you have to underdo it a couple days to offset that. Since we don't have it built within us to ever have an under day, like a day where it just feels okay to go under, all we ever eat, most people just eat either at maintenance or above maintenance, but never below it. So if once or twice a month, you go out and crush it, just for whatever reason. By the end of the year, that's how you gain 10, 15 pounds. By the end of 5, 6 years, that's how you gain 60 pounds. And it's not that there's anything wrong with your metabolism or anything. It's just, it's just there's no mechanism built in to offset those higher eat days.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And it's way easier to overeat more calories than it ever is to try to burn them off or underdo it. So trying to underdo it by 1,000 in a day, that's serious effort. That's quite a bit of work. Either work in the gym combined with a caloric deficit, or a big caloric deficit that just is all day long dealing with that feeling of wanting to eat. Yes. So either way, it's work. But
yeah,
to overeat,
need some stimulants too.
Stimulant, coffee, whatever, right? But to overeat 1,000 calories, I could do that in probably 20 seconds. Like 2 extra slices of pizza, no problem. 3 extra slices. Like, it's just so easy to overeat that, so hard to take it off. And so if we were going to say realistically, and I'm sure a lot of the guys who did a cut down can say, a legitimate 500 calorie deficit, so meaning a true 500 calories less than you burn in a day deficit, that's a fair bit of work, but manageable. Like, let's say you did it partly with exercise, partly with a caloric reduction, and you're really paying attention to your calories, and you give yourself some wiggle room. So you get, like we said, our principle of calorie guessing, not exactly counting. So you're around 500 calories. If you and I can overeat 1,500 calories, no problem. Just go out and just have a bit of extra food, and we've done it. It probably takes 3 solid days of a 500 calorie deficit, clearly, to take that back. Now that just puts you back to where you were before that day. It takes a 4th day to actually start losing again. So now let's look at the actual practical numbers. If you overeat, let's say by 1,500 calories on average, so some days are higher, some days are lower, on the holidays, weddings, like any of these sort of events, let's say it's between 1,000 and a 1,500 calorie overeat, and you do that 20, 25 times in a year, which is completely realistic. That's just 1 or 2 weekends a year, or 1 or 2 weekends a month throughout the year. There's your potential 10 pounds of weight gain. But if you overdo it by 20, 25 days, it's going to take you triple that amount of time to take that weight back off. Like we said, because it's so much easier to overeat 1,000 calories. It probably takes 2 or 3 days to take 1,000 calories off. Now, think about what I just said. That's triple the amount of time it takes just to get back to where you were. If you actually want to lose, actually see a reduction in body weight, now you got to go beyond that. That's how you end up dieting for the half of the year.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like it really just is a numbers game. And also on those under-eat days, you're going to have days where you slip up. Like some days I'm on track. I know I'm going to stop at 1,500 calories, and then somebody comes along, or I go out for a cough, just something comes up, and I'm like, oh, that day's gone. And it just happens. So to actually lose it, I mean, put it this way, 30 days of overeating probably takes 120 days to take that off. And then,
if you're crushing it.
Well, not really. 30 scattered days of overeating, and each one of those days is between 1,000.
Oh, yeah.
Let's say 30 scattered days throughout the year of overeating, and let's say you're over by 1,000 to 1,500. Mm-hmm. And that's completely realistic. Like, that would happen at a Super Bowl party, at a wedding, at any of those sort of days. On Thanksgiving, I mean, that's conservative for what's going to happen on Thanksgiving at Christmas, right?
So 1 day out of 10.
Yeah, so 1 day, yeah. 1 day out of 10, you go over by 1,000, 1,500. It's going to take you the next 100, it's going to take you 120 days to probably get all that back by producing somewhere around a 400 or 500 calorie deficit those other days.
Yeah, I mean, just think about sports seasons.
Yeah, that's the other half. That's 120 days out of the year to take back 30. And that's still just to get back to where you were before the 30. You got to go beyond those 120, or you got to go even lower. You have to have like deficit days of 600, 700, 800 calories.
Yeah,
but those are hard, man. Those are hard.
Oh yeah, like, but that's the thing, is that you plan for even that. Like, you know, a lot of people looked at my little plan that I kind of set up for myself, and there are a couple of days in there, like 2 of the days out of the week are like 500 calories, and the rest are 1,000 and stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, then you average out, right? You average out to something higher than 500.
Right, but the thing about it is, even those 500s, I mean, that's just a beacon. That's what I'm shooting for.
Oh, it's a ballpark. Right. You may end up at 700 sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I bid low. I bid low to keep myself where I need to be, just to offset any error.
Yeah. No.
No one is there. So yeah, it's crazy. I mean, if think about it. I mean, you know, we've talked about this in the past. That literally, let's say if you just on average Well, let's just do some quick math. So let's just stay on average for every day out of the year, other than 30 days. So every day out of the year, you overeat by 100 calories. So we can do this. That'd be what?
So like 330 days of the year.
Yeah. So 335 times 100. You know, divide by 3,500. I mean, that's 9.5, 10 pounds. I mean, it's pretty easy math. Anybody could do. That's just by overeating by 100 calories.
But the point is that rarely happens.
Right. but that's what we're trying to illustrate. So that's okay. So that's 30 days. So, but then if we tack on the one bad month you have.
We call it a month, but it's really just scattered days of overeating via holidays and stuff like that.
Right. So where you eat, you know, what, let's say 1,000 calories a day over?
Yeah, even just 1,000 over, yeah.
Yeah, let's just say 1,000. So 1,000 over.
It's another 30,000 calories. Yeah, it's 10 more pounds.
Yeah, so that's easily. So there's your 20 pounds right there. That's why everybody feels like their metabolism's crashing around them and, you know, all this other crazy stuff. It's not because.
And that's just, and that's an example of 1 year. Like if that could happen 3 or 4 years in a row, that's how people look back 60 pounds later and they're like, what just happened?
Think about this. That could be the difference in whether, you know, a year ago you used to walk a lot more just naturally with your job.
Oh yeah. And all of this shows how fine of a line it is. Like it really is just a really fine line.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why we kind of go on a weekly basis and try to get everybody to think on a weekly basis versus a daily basis, because when you start getting daily,
it's crazy. Well, because then you have to, then it just, where does it end? Then people start worrying about within the day, like how many hours between meals, then the composition of the meal. Like this is just further subdividing it. You can't do that. It's just, you can get nowhere thinking of it that way.
You're just going to drive yourself nuts.
And on the muscle building side, same thing happens. You can't think of it by the day, by the hour. Like post-workout nutrition, is that going to change muscle build? Please, like, come on. You really think that if you don't have a shake within a half an hour after your workout, that workout's lost? No matter how long it is after your workout, that's technically your post-workout meal. And we have reviewed the research over and over again. There's just because it's been measured at that point, it doesn't mean that that's the only point that matters. It's just when they bother.
That's just where they quit measuring.
That's where they stop measuring. And there's, you know, further along, there could be, and I think some data shows for whatever endpoints they've measured, the surrogate endpoints of proteins, of the nitrogen retention, all those sort of things, there's a compensatory dip further along. It's just how long you measure it for. So it's just on both sides, thinking too acutely just gets you obsessed about it. You just got to think bigger picture. Like I always wondered if guys ever thought, how many reps have I done for chest this year?
Yeah.
Versus last year. Like have I done more reps on that muscle this year than last year? If I haven't, why do I think it'll be bigger?
Well, not even necessarily more reps, but.
Or how much more work? Did I do more reps times more weight? Like was there more work done on that muscle group this year than last? Was there more work done on the whole body this year than last? You know, and like those are ways of thinking of it. Like you can't think so acutely of each single exercise. You have to think more big picture.
Yeah, I mean, 50 pound. I mean, a muscle that can lift 50 pounds more is going to look like a muscle that can lift 50 pounds more, given your specific body structure.
But if you've spent the entire year doing exactly what you did last year and nothing's changed, you haven't gone up in weight, you haven't gone up in, nothing's changed, then nothing's going to change. Like you're just not really going to look any different.
Yeah. Where you are right now is based on the cumulative decisions that you've made.
Up till now,
Up till now, you know, across the board. Yeah, I mean, even the things that have happened to you that technically aren't your fault, I mean, you still had to make decisions around it. So the way you look right now is based on the decisions you've made. It's a cumulative effect. So, and you have to think about it that way. Mm. I mean, it's not acute. It's cumulative. Everything adds up. So, you know, that's why we kind of talk about focusing on the big picture things or the big driver things, because those are the things nobody pays attention to. They always try to pay attention to, you know, the meal timing or, you know, should I work out in the morning or at night? Look, listen to this. If there was a specific time that you should be able to work out, personal trainers would be out of business because you'd only be able to work out between 7 and 8 a.m. and they wouldn't have any other client places to fill slots.
Yeah. I mean, the results couldn't possibly be that much different.
Yeah. I mean, literally, like, your personal training session would cost you $2,000 an hour. It would have to.
If the results were that good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it mattered that much, it would have to. Yeah. Like, you would never be able to get – gyms would only be open between 7 and 8.
Yeah. If fat burning was that much better and all that kind of stuff, yeah.
I mean, nobody – and but then it would make it – it would make the numbers not match. I mean, there's no way it could work financially.
Yeah.
Like, there'd be no such thing as gyms. There'd be no such thing as personal trainers because no one would be able to afford it. And no gym would be able to stay open because no one would be able to afford it. I mean, if you're only open 1 hour a day, that means you could only have – I mean, that means your capacity would drop by probably 1,000%.
It would just be – yeah, whatever. It's just – no one thinks of it in those terms. So,
yeah, think about how much a gym membership would cost. Your gym membership would cost you $1,000 a month because that's what it would cost just to make the numbers work. Pay the rent, you know. Like, the biggest overhead's rent and equipment.
I think this is a really abstract line of thought. I totally get what you're saying, but yeah. I don't think – like, I completely know what you're saying. Like, if that was the only time you could possibly get results or results were that much better by working out in the morning, then everyone would be scratching and clawing to work out just then. But clearly, people get results any time of day, so.
Yeah, sure. People work out all – gyms are 24 hours. People work out. I've seen guys that are huge work out at 3 o'clock in the morning.
The answer is – The time you actually can get it done is the right time.
Yeah. I mean, most efficient is different depending on who it is.
Yeah.
Most efficient and most effective is depending on what the situation is.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, then that's interesting because people always ask me when's the right time. It's like, I don't know, man. The right time, it's when you go. And everyone has their strong time of day. They just have that time that feels good. Like, I have an issue when the sun's up or down. I have to, like, mentally, like, think when the sun's down, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, so this is – I have to be in the mindset for a evening workout. When is the sun's up, I'm like, okay, this is a day workout. And nothing's different besides my disposition going to the gym. I just feel differently on the way there, and I literally have to get into the mindset once the sun's down that, oh, okay, this is an evening workout, meaning – I don't know if it makes sense to anybody. I don't know if it makes sense to you, but it really changes – the way I feel. And if I'm just in a mood that day that isn't conducive to what an evening workout means to me, I'm beat if I don't get in there before the sun goes down. And I know that sounds stupid, but there's just something going on there emotionally, my mood states, maybe I'm just moody or something, but if I'm not ready for an evening workout, I really have to make sure I get there before the sun goes down. Otherwise I'm like, oh, I just don't feel like being here. Like, and the gym's, you know, social, it's busy, there's people there and stuff. It's not how I feel like being there. And I guess I've become sensitive. I can't just show up and make a workout happen. I'm actually relatively picky, which I think many people are. If you have the ability to be picky, it really affects me if I'm not there when I feel like being there. Some people's schedules are so fixed they don't really have the choice. But if you have the choice, you already know. You already know when your best times are. And then and there's no physiological explanation for it. Some people are morning people. Some people are evening people. Some people like to blow off steam after work. Some people would rather eat first. But whatever it is, you'll know the time that's best. And there's no one can tell you that's the wrong time.
Yeah, I mean, perfect example. I mean, I'm similar. Like, I don't like working out at night either because I feel like the only reason I'm there is because I'm just going through the motions. Like, I don't want to be there. This is the time I'm supposed to be chilling out, hanging out. You know, that type of thing. I mean, I'd much rather do it early on, get the day started off right. You know, I've kind of got that ass kicking mentality at the time. You know, because
so you have the same thing then, right? Like, if things happen and that forces you to go at night, don't you have to stop and think, okay, this is a night workout?
I just don't even go.
Oh, so for you, it's just off the table. It's not happening.
If it's generally, unless like today, I haven't had time to do much.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I've just been busy all day. And as soon as I woke up, just stuff's been going on. And so, but today I was just planning on, cause, you know, I'm trying to figure out a new way to do some stuff. So today I was just going to do some cardio work. And so, you know, that's okay. It does, that's, to me, that's kind of mindless.
So that that's okay to be an evening workout.
Yeah, so today I'll go and take it and try it and mm-hmm. I haven't been eating, and part of the other thing I'm working on too is obviously doing the cardio stuff that like the, and I'll go into this in a lot more detail what I'm trying to accomplish in another podcast or another blog post, but this also is a really low eating day too.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things I'm messing around with right now. This has nothing to do with fat loss. It actually has to do with muscle building, believe it or not. So and you and I have kind of talked about this, but so for right now, this has nothing to do with the cardio part of it, because I'm going to go and it has nothing to do with me actually lifting per se. Uh-huh. It's different.
So yeah,
but even then, I don't want to be there. I don't want to be there that long, so I know I'm gonna have to force myself to stay longer than I would normally stay.
Yeah, it's interesting. I saw a guy at the gym a Sunday night. I was there just killing some time watching football on the treadmill, and he was grinding out like really heavy sets of squats. And I'm thinking, I could never do that on a Sunday night. I just feel good for him, because there's no way I couldn't do it. I don't think I could do it on a Sunday at all. Like, maybe for some reason Sunday just doesn't feel like the right day to do that.
Yeah, no, but it does, but it has to be during the day.
Yeah, early, like before noon. I'm just not going to be in the squat rack after noon on a Sunday. Yeah. That's weird. It's just, I don't think there's any reason. It's just how you grew up and how those days feel to you, but there's going to be days where it feels right. And he's there every Sunday night, so that's his leg day. I think he likes it because it's dead and he has the whole place to himself in that area.
Yeah, I do leg stuff on Saturday.
Yeah, I'll do it on Saturday, but Sunday I can't. I don't know. I just wouldn't. So
yeah,
it's the way it works.
Well, it's kind of funny. You kind of, and we're kind of straying a little bit, but it kind of goes into how you live your lifestyle and what you have in front of you. But like for me, typically Mondays and Thursdays are two of my busiest days, and so these are the days I normally plan to eat less anyway, mm-hmm. to give me some room. And so, but these are also going to be the days I'm trying this this new protocol I'm working with, and shoulder days. And chest days and stuff like that. These are all days that are like off peak hours at the gym. So I get to do whatever I want to do and not have it, like Monday, like if you work out on Monday, Monday's the worst day to do chest.
Oh, because everyone's doing it. Yeah.
Everybody's doing chest. I mean, if you're in there on Monday, leg day.
Yeah. Yeah. Try to make Monday your leg day if possible.
Yeah, I mean,
or try to make it your day off. It's just such a disaster of a day in most gyms.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it can't be chest. I mean, you'll never get it done unless if you work typical hours. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, 5 o'clock at any gym is just don't even bother.
Yeah, on Monday. So that kind of goes back to what when you were talking about taking January off. I used to advise people to take the holidays off. I used to advise people to take January off.
Oh, because all the New Year's resolutioners are in there.
Yeah, it's not as bad as it used to be, though. I remember
it used to be brutal.
Yeah, I remember back about 6 years ago, maybe even seven, where January, like literally in the health club industry, you could do 40% of your business in January.
Yeah, so sales so tell me about that. So sales just go nuts in January, right?
Not anymore. Not like they used to. Yeah.
Right.
So now you might see a. So let's say a normal club that might do anywhere from 180 to 200 memberships a month.
Mm-hmm.
In a January, they might do, let's say, maybe 300 now. Whereas before, that same club could do 400, maybe 450, and just shoot up some crazy numbers. But then, what you would see is during the summertime, the numbers would really skew downward.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, it's kind of like, you wouldn't have that type of input or people coming in and purchasing and setting up plans for themselves during the summer. You just wouldn't see it, and it would pick back up in September. September's always seems to be the biggest the next biggest month January.
Yeah.
Those 2 months. But nowadays, because it's I guess it's a little more in vogue, and the thing to do is to work out and stuff like that. It just kind of has evened out.
Oh, so the drop. So it's not an artifact of less people in January so much as a lot more of them stay.
Well, no, not necessarily. They stay. It's just that they do it sooner. They don't wait until January. So that person that has been thinking about working out, they start thinking about it in May, and June's coming around. They just go ahead and join in June.
Oh, right. So yeah. So that the novelty of the January thing isn't as big a deal.
Sure. Yeah. Because. Yeah, it's what we found over that time period was that used to it be like the week after January 1st would be just insane. Mm-hmm. It would be insane. And then that week moved back a week. And it started to be mid-January. And then it moved back another week. And then it got to the point where you just really didn't see that big spike. Like because I remember one year, it was about 4 years ago, we were just kind of waiting and expecting, you know, because we had certain monetary goals and things like that. And we were just waiting and expecting for the boom. And it never happened.
Yeah.
No, it was just kind of like a smooth kind of raise. It wasn't like a spike. And but then, you know, the other good thing about it was that, you know, the reason we thought it was going to be a big boom was because the summertime months we had done better, you know, as a company.
Right. So it wasn't that. Yeah. So it was an evening, almost a redistribution of when it all happens.
Yep. Yeah. That's exactly what it was. And now typically, the good thing about it is that, your memberships are, depending on how they're structured, people are staying longer, you know, so, you know, you don't have to, you know, really, you don't have to really crush. Like before, oh man, you had to crush people. You know,
you mean the really pushy sales?
Oh yeah. I mean, it was mandatory. I mean there, some of the stuff I saw was ridiculous that people were doing to get people by, because people would never make decisions because it was something that was so foreign to them, and this was like their first experience at it, that literally it was one of those things where people were using every trick in the book.
All right. Well, okay. So now that we're on this topic, give us some.
Oh, just okay. Perfect example. I mean, it depends on where you came in. I mean, if you came in from some type of marketing source, like sourcing, where you knew that this person was just responding to an ad, and this was the first time, this is the first experience, and chances are, environment. Whoever's first to that person as a company is the person that gets them. Mm-hmm. It's not a matter of if they are where they're going to work out. It's a matter of if they're going to do it or not.
Mm. Also, it's not like they're shopping around to other gyms. Like it's your gym or none.
Yes, it's you or none. So in that instance, the idea of actually doing it and actually becoming in better shape is the sales process.
Right.
And so basically in that particular moment, I mean, you're really digging in on the person's history. I mean, have they been to the doctor? The doctor tell them that, I mean, a perfect example. I remember this like it was yesterday. I was in Springfield, Illinois. We were running a promotion out there, and I had a woman come in, and the whole sales presentation went like this. It was basically, you know, where are you from? You know, how close do you live? That type of jazz. Oh, okay. And she just blurts out. She's like, yeah. She goes, I went to my doctor the other day, and he said that I'm having some problems, and I need to go on medication for diabetes. And I was like, oh wow, really? And my next question was, did he say that with, you know, some exercise you could get off that medication? And she was like, yeah, you know, that's kind of what I was hoping for, and that's why I'm here. And I was like, all right, great, here, sign here.
Oh yeah, that's it.
Literally, that was it. I mean, there was basic price stuff, but it wasn't like a big laborious process of explaining everything.
Right.
The doctor did all the work. So that was the process. Whereas, you know, people that, you know, move into town, or they've been working out, or they're looking for a new place, or they're kind of familiar with it, the process is different. It's more or less a, you know, who is this place for? So what you do with that particular person is you basically qualify people out to let them know if this place is for them or not.
Ugh.
So typically what you'll see is, you know, if it's a woman that comes in, you want to qualify out the people that are, you know, powerlifters and make a lot of noise and people that are intimidating, and just basically say, you know, this place isn't for them.
Uh-huh.
You don't come out and say it's for her, but you, by disqualifying everybody else, she knows that it's for her.
Right. Gotcha.
It makes her feel special. And then the other thing is you just kind of go over and describe why it's different than any other place she's ever seen. Like what are the things that, you go over. So there's kind of two different sales processes. With the person that is, you know, the why it's different person, it's a lot harder to clamp down on somebody, you know, using a lot of the only thing you have there is deals and price.
Yeah.
So, and typically the only thing you could say is, typically the only thing you could say is that, you know, this, we've only got a certain number of these left, and this could be true or false.
Yeah.
Technique. We only have a certain number of these left. If you come back tomorrow, they'll likely be gone. That's all I can do. You know, or this discount's only valid on your initial visit. If you leave, you don't get it. which, you know, the savvy consumer would call you out on and show up the next day and you give them the same deal, which made you look an asshole. That's why I hated that type of sales environment. But the other person, you could use a lot of the same things because they really wanted to think about it. But what they wanted to think about wasn't necessarily, you know, if your place was the place for them or if there's going to be all these, you know, bodybuilders and people that were going to intimidate them. What they were trying to get wrapped around their head was, am I going to work out or not? Is this something I'm going to stick with? How do I do that? And the way you do that is obviously kind of going through all of their objections. Sometimes you have to find money for them. So if they're smokers or if they eat a lot of fast food.
Oh, you got to relate to them where they're going to save money.
Yeah, they've already budgeted that money. They're already spending that money. What you do is just rebudget it for them. You say, all right, well, you know, you're going to quit smoking. That's going to save you like $150 a month. Mm. And, you know, you're going to stop eating as much fast food. That's going to save you another $100 a month. We're only asking $29.95, $39.95, $49.95. I mean, you're actually coming away a winner in this one.
Yeah. So it's just, yeah, I guess it's a touchy subject for people because they're, like you said, that they really don't know what they're getting into.
Yeah, I mean, the typical thing somebody would call a health club is the first thing they always ask is, how much does it cost? But the reason they ask how much it costs is because they didn't know anything else to ask.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only thing they needed. They had to ask, so how much is it? Because they don't understand what it can do for them. You know, and so literally, I swear, this is the funniest thing ever, but it happened every single time. Where somebody would call in and say, yeah, I just want to know how much it costs. And I go, great. How'd you hear about us? Totally change the subject.
Yeah.
Get them talking about how they heard about us. You know, did they get a friend? Oh, great. Okay, cool. Yeah. Yeah. I know Bob. He's a great guy. So what did you want to do with your body today?
Yeah. Yeah. And then the cost thing's out the window.
Exactly. It doesn't even come back into play. So it's, I know it's kind of funny, and you know, I guess this is why one of the reasons why I'm really interested in a lot of the influence techniques and stuff like this, because I've seen it. I've seen it firsthand. How, I mean, literally tens, you know, probably 10,000 people, you know, phone calls and sitting in front of people. I've seen exactly the things that you can say and direct and do things, and it matters. It matters a lot. So when, I mean, I've literally seen a person like that I was training in sales. Go from not being able to, you know, get a word out of their mouth to be able to, you know, close people with consistency at a high level within a week just by following a certain process.
Mm-hmm.
I've also seen people, you know, be able to close better when they get in better shape. I've just seen it. Mm-hmm. It's the weirdest thing. You wouldn't think it would matter, but it does.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, I know we skewed off, but it's kind of interesting.
Well,
stuff.
That's okay. This is just a two-part podcast then.
Yeah. But yeah, that's as part of a history, that's why I know a lot about this stuff.
Oh, yeah, the whole entire fitness industry. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, just the
industry. Well, I mean, we got it covered. We got it covered from nutrition to supplements to health clubs to the workout itself.
Marketing, yeah. I mean, it's
all of it.
Yeah, and all of it, it's funny. The marketing end of it. It's all BS.
Of health clubs?
No, I mean, for everything. The more, if for the most part, what you see for most programs, most health clubs, even what you're saying, supplements, I mean.
Oh, there's everything. Just, there's so many layers. There's so many ways to interpret what you've been exposed to. It's not.
Yeah.
Almost nothing is face value. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close. The best thing about health clubs, I'll say this, and the reason I always advise people to go to health clubs versus starting something in their house, and this depends on where you are on the continuum of how long you've been working out. But if you're first starting out, join a club because it gives you somewhere to go. It gives you a destination to kind of get out of your own life and go somewhere because then you show up. Then you don't have your wife coming in to tell you to take out the trash while you're down in the basement trying to pump up some reps. You know, then you don't have, you know, the phone ring and something come up. Then you don't have, you know, you say, oh, I'll get to it tomorrow. I mean, literally the act of showing up helps to.
It's almost like you need to go to a gym to show up, to build the habit to show up so that you can do it at home and avoid distractions.
Yeah. Yeah, and for most people, it ends up being cheaper in the long run. I mean, in the long run, I mean, if you go out and buy a treadmill, like my dad went out and bought a treadmill because and I was like, dude, what are you doing? It's like, there's a gym down the road. Just go join the gym. It'll save you some money. Ah, I'll just do it in the house. It's convenient. That way I'll do it. And I was like, that ain't how it works. But, you know, I couldn't tell him. I've seen it time and time again.
Yeah. So does he do it?
Every once in a while. He started out good, but, you know, every once in a while. But
it's also that sort of thing, like, you don't want to, like, for people who have trouble sleeping, you don't want to do anything else in bed. You don't want to read or you don't want to watch TV. It's like, that's just for sleep. It's kind of like, is your workout, can you actually work out at home without home feeling like it's work and if it's supposed to be home?
Yeah. Well, that's like me right now. You know, obviously with the whole having surgery and stuff, I kind of gave up the office and working at home. And, you know, I got to have it, something, man. It just feels different.
It's different. Oh, yeah, I know.
You know, I mean, going to work and actually having that in office is something that's going to happen. You know, it's just, I don't know why, I don't know, but it's just the way it is. Yeah. And you know, ultimately, let's going back to the kind of the health club thing really quickly, it actually helps keep you focusing on task because unless you prepay it up front, it's something that reminds you every single month.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You know, and this is another reason I really never recommend people paying the low ball numbers. So, like, if you're going to go to a club, like, go to a good one, like one that charges, you know, $40 or more a month. You know, don't go to the low ball one because, you know, if you don't use it for that month, it doesn't hurt. And they know that. And that's why they bill the way they bill because they know you're not going to use it. They just got access to your checking account for $19 a month.
Oh, you mean you almost want the pain to remind you to go?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I guess we're all either moving towards pleasure or away from pain, so.
Yeah, I mean, you don't, because nobody ever cancels out the $19 membership or the $10 membership. I mean, who would? Why would you ever do that? I mean, let's think about the psychological things that you would go through to go cancel that out. Walk up and say, yeah, I need to cancel out this $10 a month membership. And then all the guy would have to say, look at you and say is, oh, is it just something that's not fitting in your budget anymore? Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, how would you feel at that point?
Yeah. Well, no, I understand.
Yeah, so that's why I don't typically like those clubs that much. I mean, plus the equipment's. You don't
oh, yeah, it's just, much. Yeah, it just gets into, then you just kind of don't feel like being there, so.
Yeah. So you got to, if you're going to pick a place, I always say this: either pick a place with the most hardcore guys, or pick a place with the hottest chicks.
Yeah. That's an easy way to. That's an easy. Half the time it'll turn into the same place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because the chicks that really look the best are also kind of hardcore as well.
Yeah, totally. That's how it is in all the gyms I've ever trained in.
Yeah, and you know what? You might pay a little bit more, but you know what? It's freaking worth it because at least you'll go.
Yeah.
I ain't a lie. There's been times in my life where I've went to the gym 5 o'clock in the morning just to check out women that are there. I mean, it kept me consistent. That's not how it is now, obviously, but hey, you got to use everything you can.
Yep. It's another tool in the chest.
Yeah. Well, we're giving you a big damn tool belt.
Yeah.
That's what we're giving you.
Oh, man. All right. So, well, I mean, we've ended up on a couple points here. So how do we wrap this one up?
Well, this is the holiday one. So basically, you know, we've got the, if you need to know how to submit your pictures, just listen to the beginning again. If you need to know how to eat, just listen to the middle where we talk about that. And if you're in the market for a health club,
listen to the end.
When the new year comes around, listen to the end.
Fair enough. And it'll all be in a transcript too.
There you go. So you got anything you want to add?
No, that's it.
All right, cool. All right, so for John Barbin, I'm Brad Howard, and that's your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.